Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Leadership Lean In. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am going to be joined here in a second by one of my greatest friends and amazing leader, none other than Transformation Nation. Make some noise. Mike Todd is in the building today. Mike from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mike Todd is about to join. I just first want to say thank you to everyone that has been listening, subscribing, commenting, sharing. Means the world to myself and the team. Make sure that you don't miss any of the episodes that are coming up. We are quarantined, but we are still connected, and we're bringing great content to you right here from my, guys, is it weird that I'm in my own bedroom? It's where we are. And look who just joined right now. My man, right here. We're just shooting the intro. Here we go. We're going live now.
How are you feeling?
I'm good, man. Just finished getting the message for Sunday.
Wow.
And so I'm now some weight is off my shoulders. And it's Wednesday, so I'm feeling good, bro.
This is like, I just talked to Levi Lusco a little bit ago. For guys like him and yourself, so much of your world is online. This, yeah. In some ways, does it feel like comfortable, familiar, not out there?
Yeah, man, I honestly think God's prepared our church specifically for this and kind of gave me a burden and a passion about it a couple years ago. Literally, one of my team members told me that at the beginning of this year, they reminded me of a talk that I did, and I like set up our whole staff with our yearly goals and all that other stuff. And the last one is like, we're opening a new campus. And so the team was like, what? We're opening a new campus? Where? I said, online. Like, it was a whole slide, a whole presentation, a whole different thing. And I didn't know, you know, nobody knew that Corona was about to happen. We didn't know what was going to happen, but I just had this like thing. And most people would think our online ministry was successful or booming or all those other things, but I just knew there had to be another level of intentionality around it, a right. Follow-up of finances put into it. And so we started that this year. We didn't know that it would be accelerated in the way that it's happening right now, but for me as a leader, I hate all the devastation that's happening around it, all of the fear, all of the loss, but at the same time, I think it's a prime opportunity for the church to really raise up if people get the right perspective about it. And so I've just been trying to go back to God and get the right perspective about it. And it's working so far for what God's doing here.
I love it. Now talk to me about, I think this is one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. I saw that you put out a phone number and you were live just praying with people. Now, recently Joel Osteen was in town. He's like, hey, come down to, what is it? Sirius Radio.
Yeah, Sirius.
And people call in and we'll pray together. We're in a studio. People are calling in. We're praying with people live. I'm like, this is kind of crazy. Bro, you're in your bedroom on a cell phone.
Oh, yeah, dog.
Just praying. Like, to me, not only was that creative, but I love that because you are a man of the people. Like, you genuinely love people. Where does that come from, and how has that helped you?
Man, I honestly, it was modeled for me. My mom and dad love people. I can't remember a time that we didn't have somebody staying in our house or like them taking somebody in that was going through a hard time. And they were just always about meeting people right where they were, helping them transition. And so when I saw this opportunity, it made me be like, okay, let me see if I can do something with this. And I didn't know if it was going to work. But what I did was I bought a phone and I got a new number, a 918 number. And I was like, yo, I'm just going to use this to connect with people who rock with Transformation Church and Transformation Nation. So I put the number out there. So I have two phones, one for my wife and one for everybody else. And so I just put it out there, and bro, over 21,000 people text me. Chad, I can't make this stuff up. My literal phone was like, it was like bouncing. And so what I did was I went through and I literally just started calling people. I was like, who's up? So I went on Instagram Live and I was like, I'm not talking to y'all. I'm only talking to people who text me. So it made it one of those things that
That's really cool.
Allows people to like connect a different way and feel like it's intimate. I'm in my bedroom so everybody can see. But then I just started calling people. And man, everything from husbands and wives who have been married a year that met or sent each other relationship goals and now they're married, to people who are struggling, brother got shot and made it through, but just really needed encouragement, pray for them, girls searching for our identity. I was just calling people and it was like the coolest thing ever to watch. Like people be like, yo, I watch you on the screen and I've been to your church. I actually come every Sunday, but I'm in a sea of people. Like you just called me, like you just like called me. And I think at this time, like people need those little things to just let them know, like God's got this.
Yeah.
He sees you. There's hope. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm going live again tonight. I'm going to do it again tonight. But
I
yeah, 21,000 people text me, bro. And
unbelievable. I want to, it brings me to a question I had written down. And I feel like one of the things watching your life and knowing you, I don't know if everybody realizes, number one, you're a bad man on the drum kit and you're a producer.
I appreciate
you got music.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have this natural inclination towards marketing. Like you really understand the power of marketing. Like if you worked at a marketing firm, whatever, this is one of the 21,000, I get it. If you worked at a marketing firm, like if we were doing a Netflix show or if we were doing a movie or whatever, you could market that.
Yes, sir.
Where does that come from?
I honestly don't. It is marketing. But I think about it first as, hold on, my wife is calling me. Answer me.
You want to give me, go ahead, get it. You want to get it.
Hey, Nat, I'm doing an actual recording right now with our friend Chad Beach. You see him?
Hello.
And so,
how you doing?
I'm really in the middle of something. Are you okay?
Yes, I'm trying to leave the house.
Okay, well, I'm going to actually come to the house in just a little bit once we finish this leadership lean-in, okay?
Okay.
I love you.
I wanted to see it with you.
Okay, well then come meet me at the office and then we can see it together.
All right.
Love you.
Love you.
All right, bye.
Love you, Chad.
Love you.
Bye, Dad. Oh, stop. Get out of here.
Hey, listen, something that every leader needs to know, if you don't answer the phone for your wife, It is the dumbest thing you could do. Irresponsible, because that is more your responsibility than any job, any ministry. Like this is your first ministry, and we could do a whole nother segment on that. But
just that, you know, what's crazy is like I find that during this quarantine time, even though we're in the house together, there could be so much assumption that's made. I find our communication is faced in a more difficult time than ever before.
Ever before? Because you're faced with it all the time.
It's all day. Like, I'm like, last night I had a meeting with our creative team at 8 p.m. And our girl that helps us had sent it and Julia agreed. She was like, yeah, she put like a thumbs up on it or a heart or whatever. So when I saw that, I thought Julia was like, she was good. Come to find out in the middle of the meeting, she's like, I didn't know about this meeting. And I was like, wait, but I think that you thumb. And she's like, oh, I just was. And I was like, that's my bad. I need to. It's crazy right now.
It's different. But back to the question you asked about marketing. I don't think my natural inclination is to think of it as marketing. I think my natural inclination is to think about it as, how does my end user experience what I'm trying to give them? And so I'm always thinking about what is the main thing that I'm trying to get across and how is my end user, whether that be a 26-year-old young man who is upper white middle class, or that is a 58-year-old black woman who's been in of the Baptist church all her life. Like, how is my end user going to experience this?
Yeah.
And so when I do that, I reverse engineer it. So like, even when I come up with a sermon title, like I go from, how would the person looking through YouTube view what I'm saying? I go from, yo, wouldn't it be crazy if I was any age that if Chad Veach actually called me? Like, wouldn't it be amazing if a Crazy Faith tour like showed up closer to me instead of everybody coming to Tulsa? Like, I always think of things from the end user's perspective. Right. And what then that makes me do is have to go back and ask, what are we doing and how do we get it to the end user in the most creative, easy, obtainable way? And when we do that, every time it usually ends up being something that's like, wow, that was amazing. Like, not wow, we get to do this. And so that's kind of how I start. I really don't start with like, how is this going to make me look? How is this going to inconvenience my day? I don't really even start with like, how does this look for my brand? Like, I don't start with that because a lot of times people won't do things that would really help people because they don't want it to look whack on their brand. And my brand is really a sub-brand. Needs to be done as a leader to make sure that my product gets to the people. And that's why I had some guys come up to me, they shall remain nameless, and they're like, bro, you post your message every day. I said, I work too hard on what we're doing to not try to get this to the end. I'm not posting the messages for pastors.
That's it.
Like, if pastors get helped by it or they get informed by it, cool. Or if they, but you know the word. I'm posting this for the dude who's in isolation, the young lady who's in college and is about to wild out, but that little 1 minute clip or that 2 minute clip every day makes them go back and watch the like. And so again, you got to really define who your end user is, who that target is, because if you don't, you will try to communicate to so many different people that your message becomes watered down.
I love that.
Yeah.
I feel like one thing I love about you is that there's always a sense of authenticity.
Yeah.
I love that, you know, I remember last year when we were at Ed Young's.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, I used to be in this room. Like, I brought a group here. Like, I would, and you, I think you did that at Elevation before. Is that right? Like,
yeah.
So there's a humility. Talk to me about your process of sitting in rooms, like, with your group, in the back, consumer, watch yeah. platform. There is a student inside of you.
Yeah.
A lot of pastors won't do that because there's too much pride.
Yeah.
Where does that humility, is that from your parents as well? Were you always, because I do feel like you're very aware of your gift and yet you still have that tension of like humility.
Yeah, man. I honestly think like I was super prideful before God got my heart. So that's the first thing everybody needs to know. Like, I thought I was the man, the only man. And you know what I'm saying? Like, that was me. But then as I started to read the scripture and I started to answer the call of God on my life, I really recognized that the one up that everybody who was humble had was God was with them. So like, I look at David's life and it's like, and God was with David, and God was with David, and God was with David over and over and over again is because he had the mark of humility. The Bible calls him, even with his mistakes, he was a man after God's own heart. And when I start realizing all the people that I looked up to in the Bible, all the people that I looked up to in real life, not just what they produced, but who they were behind the scenes, they had this like streamline of humility where it was meekness. It was power under control. It's like, I could come in here and wreck everything, but let me take the humble route. Let me ask questions. Let me act like I don't know. And maybe I'll find out something I really don't know. And right. So every room I walk into, man, I go in like a dummy. And I don't say that in any type of way, except like people do not give freely to people who already think they know everything.
Right.
And when you walk into rooms and you act like, yeah, we got online figured out. And yeah, I don't preach at Elevation Church. Or yeah, bro, I got this book deal. Like, no, everybody's turned off by that.
Yeah. But
you take the low road and you find out about people. Hey, what do you do? Oh, man, not what I'm doing. Like, what? And I mean, you're the best at that. Like, I've literally watched you be interviewed and ask other people all the questions. Like, you're like one of those dudes. But I think the greatest leaders are students.
That's it.
I mean, I think, honestly, it's one of the marks of a great leader is to go in and see, how can I learn? What can I absorb from this? What makes me better after this encounter? And I think for me, I know who I am without God. I know I don't deserve to be here. And I think a lot of people get this, they're not humble because they feel entitled. Right. And that's one of the things in business, in ministry, in anything. At the moment you feel like I deserve this, there's another level of humility that gets pushed out of your life. And I just err on the side of gratitude, gratefulness, thankfulness that I'm even here, then that keeps me low. And man, God is really close to the humble, the lowly in spirit. Bro, everything that I do is like God is with me. Like he's right here, blessing it, putting his favor on it. And I do think that has something to do with humility. And then the other thing is I don't want to be humbled by God. Like every person that like he gives you an option. Either you can be humble or be humbled.
Period.
And I just don't ever want to see the other end of this. Like I don't want to know what it looks like to be humbled.
Right.
And have to go through that process. So yeah, man, I want to walk in authenticity,
right,
humility, man. And I'm just grateful to be. Man, I'm on the leadership leaning with Chad Beach, ladies and gentlemen.
So yeah, I think you know, when you come from humble beginnings, you know, when you come from, because you always remember, like, I remember going to the youth conference of like 4,000 and seeing Judah up on stage and sitting in the back with my interns and being like,
yeah, bro.
Wow, like that's so now to stand up there is like, dude, I remember being the guy in the room that was like, I got a little group. You know what I mean? Like, you never forget that.
Never forget it. Yeah. And I don't think you're supposed to. I think that's why in the Bible, they always set up memorials. My memorials are pictures. Like I take a lot of pictures everywhere I go because I want to remember, like, that's where God did that.
How far,
like,
God brought you.
Yeah, that's where God did that. And I think if everybody would take just a second and remember where you were, even if it's not where you want to be,
yeah,
it will be gratitude that raises up on the inside of you.
I love that.
It doesn't look like what you want it to look like. Man, think about how many things you've learned. Think about what has turned in you. It may hasn't changed outwardly, but think about what's changed inwardly. Think about how you value relationships more now. Think about, like, there's just so many things and there's different layers to it. But I think that one of the keys to that is remembering. And honestly, in this fast-paced world that we live in, it tries to keep us chasing the next moment instead of remembering the last one. And that's one thing that I've really tried to be intentional about, like remembering the last moment. Like when all of this Corona stuff happened, I mean, this year I was scheduled to do some of the biggest engagements that I've ever done in my entire life. Like the names, the stages, it's like, how in the world did I get here?
Right.
And right now it's looking like most of them about to be canceled. And at that moment, like I had a decision to make. Like, am I about to be mad and pissed because, like, all of this stuff is gone and that changes finances and that changes all that? Or am I grateful to even have an engagement to cancel?
Right.
Like is in that moment. And then I started remembering, like, where I spoke last year and how I was on the stage with you and Rich and in an arena and how God allowed me to minister at Transformation Church and in London and like, oh, I'm good. That immediate anxiety, frustration turns into like, yo, I'm good, because if it wasn't for the grace of God and all that has happened, I wouldn't even have a business to be mad that I'm losing business in. I wouldn't have, like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
You can copy and paste that to every area of your life. Like the same blessing that we prayed for, now we're complaining about.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That is a real tension that we really have to bring into alignment, I really think.
I love that. I want to talk to you. All my questions, by the way, have to do with your strengths and things that you're really good at, that things that you just naturally operate in. So I think so much of leadership, you know, like forever growing up, everyone's always like, you know, you got to focus on your weaknesses. You got to really, like, you know, and I think that Craig Rochelle says it this way, your weaknesses are no laughing matter. And I could not agree more.
Yeah.
I've got blaring weaknesses like every leader. There's a dark side to every leader. And I think we got to work on those weaknesses.
Yeah.
I think at the same time, what you're good at, what you're great at, You've got to capitalize on it. You've got to put energy towards.
Yeah.
One of the things that you strike me as someone that has some of the best people skills.
Oh, wow.
Of anybody. It's amazing. When you came to my birthday party, my little sister met you. And she said about you, this is such a great compliment. She said, that guy, the way he interacted with me, you would have thought he was hosting the party.
Oh, wow.
What a great, I thought that was a great compliment.
Wow, that's like, awesome. Thank you.
Because you socially put it on yourself to make people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
To almost like, I always feel like my life, I'm in the hospitality business all the time.
All the time.
Let's stop.
All the time.
I'm in the hospital. If I'm the customer at Starbucks, I'm still hosting them.
Yep.
Talk to me about what you think about when you have 21,000 people. That's part of your hospitality gift.
Yeah.
You love people. So when I say the words people skills, what comes to mind?
When you say people skills to me, I think two things. The first thing I think is God's passion. And I don't mean to take everything churchy and spiritual, but our vision is representing God to the lost and found for transformation in Christ. And I found out like two things, like lost and found are either God's people who are found or God's passion who are lost. And so anytime I think of people, I think of God's passion or God's people. Like you're either in one of two categories right now. So if I come into contact with you, I want everybody to be in the category of God's people. And if you're not, I want you to feel loved like you knew you were God's passion. And so I always take the attitude of making people, you took the words out of my mouth, feeling comfortable, because I feel like if you feel comfortable with me, then I can help you go from wherever you're at closer to. I'm not trying to convert everybody or get everybody to do thing every time I come in contact with them, but I do want the door open to be able to feel like you're comfortable enough to come approach me or to watch something that I have to say or to share something. And you can feel from my spirit that like, no, he's a real dude. That's genuine. Like, I don't even know about all the stuff he's saying right now, but I had an encounter with him. And so I'll listen to what he says because I had an encounter with him. I'll listen. I'll do what he's doing, even if I don't fully agree with it, because I encountered the genuineness and the realness within. And I think that's where our generation messes up. They're so into making sure the content is so pristine,
right,
that they miss the compassion part of it. The Bible says Jesus was moved with compassion. That's what made him do stuff. And for me, when I think people skills, like I'm trying to just figure out where people is at so I can just let them know they're going to be okay there and they're going to be okay to move forward. I want them to laugh. I want them to have hope. That's why even in this pandemic, man, I just want to be something that's consistent. I can't open a food pantry right now. Like I can't like go do everything, but what I can do is what I know is meet people where they are, like share good news with them, yep, and hopefully make some people laugh along the way. And so when I come in contact with people, I think the skill is to meet them where they're at. I think that's the greatest people skill, is to meet people where they're at. So if I go into a room of golfers, I don't play golf because y'all don't invite me to play golf. But
yo, because I ain't invited. I ain't get invited.
Because I don't get invited to play golf. But if I know I'm in a room of golfers, my mind automatically goes to how can I make these people feel comfortable with what they're already comfortable with? So I automatically think of the one time that I saw Tiger Woods play. I think of being able to hit a hole in one at the putt-putt golf range and make a joke about it. Like,
I relate.
But I'm just trying to get to where the people understand, like, oh, he gets me. We're on the same page. That's why I use a lot of examples when I communicate. That's why I just try to meet people where they're at. I think that's the greatest skill.
And by the way, when it comes to using examples, no one used them more than Jesus. It says he never preached without telling a story.
Without a parable.
Yeah, yeah. So that's I love that. But I feel like someone said recently, you can't win people that don't like you.
Wow.
So where does leadership start? Leadership starts with being liked.
Wow. That
is. You have to be liked to take somebody somewhere on the journey. I don't care where you're trying to take them, but they're not going anywhere if they don't like you.
That's bars right there, bro. That's nasty.
So you need favor. You need likability. So one of my favorite things Carl says is everything about us says everything about us. Yeah. So from the hat to the hoodie to the shoes to the everything about us says everything about us. And so it starts with being liked, but don't get it twisted. Our goal is not to be liked. Our goal is that we're taking you somewhere. I understand where the front door is.
Yeah. You can't follow somebody you can't stand.
Exactly.
Well, I work at a job every day that I can't stand a person. Like somebody saying that right now that's watching. Yeah. But you're looking for your off-ramp. As soon as somebody gives you an out, if you can't stand that leader, you can't stand that person, you're getting out of there. So I totally agree with that. And yeah. That's amazing.
That's awesome. Talk to me about, because when I think about you, I also think about the word reinvent. We've talked about this, that, greatness is always reinventing yourself. That's just part of your life. That's part of the mandate of greatness is what got you here won't get you there.
That's good.
That's all of leadership, right? What worked yesterday, what used to work for me, now works against me.
Very true.
So when I use the word reinvent in your context, because again, leadership leaning, we got a lot of leaders that are, I always think the tough part about leadership is most leaders are making the decision when it's too late. Mm. They're making it when they need to, not when they should.
Yeah, that's good.
Like, I gotta change this. I gotta change this. I'm getting diminishing returns. So then out of necessity, I got to change. Well, great leaders, I think, have forecast to reinvent.
Yeah.
So a great example you are to use is like, hey, we're launching another campus. But it's like, let's go. Where are we going? Online. Because it's reinventing what we're doing. When I use that word reinvent in your context, in your space, what comes to mind in terms of leadership?
So I talk to my staff about this all the time, but it's proactive leadership. It's not reactive leadership. And it's kind of what you just said, but most of the time when we need to make the decision, it's too late. And so I'm always trying to think of what is the next thing that will produce momentum to what we're doing, not hold the moment. And a lot of people are trying to hold the moment like, oh man, if we could just do conference like we did it last year, if we could just get that moment back. And I found that when you try to hold moments, you lose momentum. But if you're trying to think of what will bring, how do we use this moment to create momentum for the next thing? It changes everything. And so that's why, crazy story. So this past year, we did our very first conference. As a church, we did our very first conference and we called it version one. And that was kind of a cop out. So if it was bad, then we could tell everybody it was our version one. We told you. The crazy thing about it, all glory to God, we sold out of the conference. 4,500 people came. There was somebody there from every state in the U.S. and 30 different countries. Chad, when I tell you, it was and we got to have it in the building we now own. And it was just
crazy.
It was like pandemonium once in a lifetime. And so right before the conference, everybody, once we sold out 2 weeks before the conference, everybody was like, yo, next year is going to be crazy. And I was like, we're not doing it next year. And they were like, what? Like, hold on, we just sold out of our first conference. What do you mean we're not doing it next year? I said, next year won't be the same moment. We need to bring momentum to this. I said, we're taking it on tour next year. Like, hold on, who takes their conference on tour the next year? But in my heart, in my mind, I had already made the plan, I'm not going to be traveling as much. I know my calling is Transformation Church. And so instead of going to all of these conferences, what if we take Crazy Faith Tour to these cities? And since I'm not going to be speaking in that arena 4, 5, 6, 7 times, when we come, it'll be more attractive for people to come. They get the full experience. We don't have to, we can bring Transformation Church to them. And that's where we were being innovative when we didn't have to. I was providing proactive leadership. Nobody in my team would have ever said, we need to do something else right now. Right. They would have been let's run it back. Let's do it again. And in my heart, in my mind, I knew he could do that. But I see what could bring momentum to this is if we would start fires all over the nation. And instead of doing 50, let's do 4. Let's hit the major, harder metropolitan area. Let's go LA, Miami, Houston, New York. Let's go big. And if we fail, we're going to learn tons. And then be able to come back home and do a conference. Like, if worst case scenario. But what I was trying to do was bring momentum to that moment and not just hold that moment. And so
I love that.
Every leader, not saying that you have to do that,
right.
But for us, we could take that step. We could take that stab, that chance, and not lose much. And a lot of times, you lose more by waiting too long not to take the chance. And second year, if it blows over and it's a fail, we go back to doing it regular and we just keep doing that. And by the 9th year of the conference, nobody even knew we went on tour one time. It's a myth story. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. But I think that's the hard call, right? The most traditional form of leadership is going with what's already working.
Already working.
If it ain't broke,
don't fix it.
Right? But the problem with that is that you get stagnant and you just kind of like just turn the hourglass over, the same glass over, and it's just ticking time until it's irrelevant. But you're making moves in the midst of growth and momentum. I think that's great leadership to me. That's what I'm looking for. Is like, how do you, and by the way, that comes with resistance sometimes.
Oh, bro.
That comes with being cross-examined. Like, bro, what are you thinking? How do you?
If I told you some of the stories, bro, of what has happened, I'm about to tell you some offline because we know too many people. But all I'm saying is, when you try to be innovative, you have to not look for the agreement of everybody, and that is really the mark of being the leader. Live with your decisions and be able, and that's where humility comes back in, because you have to be humble enough to be like, yo, I missed it. My bad, team.
No, my bad.
That wasn't a good, and a lot of people won't do that. And so it makes it very hard to lead bold, because when you lead bold, you will fail some.
That's it.
And that's a part of it. If you lead bold and you're humble, you can fail and your team will still ride with you. So I think one of the biggest things when you, the tension of innovating and being proactive in leadership is that you will not have agreement from everybody. When it does work, it's a team win. It's not your win. And so that's a big thing that you have to, because there's a part of you that'd be like, y'all didn't even believe in this when I said it at first. Wasn't nobody trying to go with me? And then when it works, it's like, man, this was the greatest idea we've ever had. And that's where your humility comes back in, and you got to step back and be like, that is the greatest idea we've ever had. Thank you for being the team that believed in this vision from the very beginning. Like, and that's, those L's as a leader turn into the stripes that make people follow you.
That's it. And that ownership.
That ownership. And I mean, being a leader is taking L after L after L after L to your pride. And that's why the greatest of these, the Bible says, shall be called a servant. All Jesus was the lead servant.
Yep.
Like, that could have been the different term for leader. He was the lead servant. And so I think anybody, whether you serve a Fortune 500 company or a business from home or serving in a ministry, you have to become comfortably uncomfortable with taking a lot of L's so that the whole team can win.
I love that.
Yeah.
Talk to me about, and this is great because part of being a leader is being criticized.
Yes, sir.
I heard someone say, if you don't ever want to be criticized, don't ever do anything. Do nothing at all. The more you continue to excel as God's hand is on your life, amazing opportunities that you talked about are coming your way, I can only imagine that it has double, triple, gone to a place where you're like, really? Like, have you ever gotten to that place where you're just like, I'm here. Like, guys, 21,000 people are texting me. Are you for real?
Yeah.
Like, how do you handle criticism?
So at the end of the day, do you do anything with Enneagram? Do you know your number on Enneagram and stuff like that?
I haven't taken it. Everyone thinks I'm a 7, but Julia thinks I'm a 3.
She would probably know more than anybody.
The 3 is the achiever.
Yeah.
I'm kind of driven that way. What are you?
So I'm an 8. I'm a challenger.
Challenger.
Yeah. So my natural reaction to stuff like that is I want to fight. Like, not physically fight, but right. Like, I want to prove to you, like, that whatever you're saying has no bearing. I want to break it down. I want all that. But one of the things that I've learned in this last season is that my personality has to submit to my purpose. Is a huge thing that a lot of leaders don't. They stick to their personality over their purpose, and they end up killing what I believe is God's ultimate plan for their life because they're so like, nah, I'm a nada. And so one of those things that I've really had to do is honestly turn the criticism off. Like, and this sounds simple. And people are like, do you ever look at your comments? Yes, I do look at some of the comments. And then I have to stop. I bi-weekly go off of Instagram and social media for a day or two. I fast it almost every week, every other week. Not because of any other reason, is I cannot have anything in more control of my responses and reactions than the things that got me here. You know what I'm saying? And so I have to be in a place where I'm centered and where I can look at stuff and be like, oh, that comes with it. Like if I'm 200 comments deep in the comment, like about to text somebody back, I'm not centered. Like if I'm giving a preacher man 911, like my time by responding to what's happening, I'm not centered. And okay. So honestly, somebody asked me, does it get easier as you continue to go up in responsibility and servicehood and influence? I said, no, but you get stronger. And that's the key to what I've found, how to deal with the criticism. There's a great book that I read that really helped me called Leadership Pain by Sam Chan. And the whole concept of it is, how can you run with horses if you can't run with footmen? Like, how can, if this stuff down here is messing with you, how are you going to get it at that level? And that level is where you think you're going to go, but it comes with this level of criticism, this level of responsibility. And when I read that book, it really changed my perspective on, like, some of this just comes with influence, comes with being effective, comes with being Black, wearing yellow hoodie and wearing, like, it's just like somebody's gonna say something,
yeah,
because they see it,
yeah.
And that has made me stronger, just having the right perspective and then being centered, man, cutting it off and allowing people, and then listening to the voices that matter the most.
That's
like
it.
I don't go to Instagram right after I preach. I go to my wife, like, hey, how is that? Like, I may call Rich, I may talk to Tim Ross, I may get somebody that I know loves me. Beyond, like, if I go up and cuss everybody out on the platform, they'll be like, bro, that was bad, but yeah. I love you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I talked to my guy, Charles, who's a creative pastor at my church. Like, how was that, bro? Like, what do you think? And especially when you're talking as a pastor or a leader on subjects that aren't sexy and, like, everybody don't want to hear, like, I cannot go to the people who cheer to get validation.
That's
I have to move all of my validation meters to the inside.
Yep.
And I have to talk to the people who I know that love me regardless of That's what it. I produce. And so, yeah, man, the critics going to be there, but it goes with being effective.
Yeah, it's part of it. I think that it is a little bit sobering to hear people don't like you or they question your motives and your intentions. Honestly, this last year for me was the most criticism I've ever faced.
Wow.
From a public standpoint.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I really felt like, wow, people are mean.
Yeah, definitely.
People out there are just flat out mean. I never faced it. Rich was always like, man, people don't hate on you. I get hate every day. I get blown up every day. Yeah, how come people like you so much? And I was always like, yeah, that's weird. And then I went through it and I was like, hey, now I can relate. That sucks. Like, I didn't know what he was referring to.
Yeah.
But I think I always go back to.
But you know what that did, Chad? That means your effectiveness and your influence had went up. That's the only thing. And sometimes what you have to use is you have to use the criticism as an indicator. Like a lot of times you don't know your effectiveness in one area until you get like your little blinking meter is like, oh, the criticism meter has gone up. Something. That means I must be doing something, making a difference at a higher level. Right. And it is difficult to deal with. I mean, from family stuff and all of those different things, it's difficult to deal with. But I do know that you're stronger now after going through that. You're more relatable now after going through that. You're more understanding now after going through that than you were before it.
100%.
And you become stronger.
Yep. This is the last thing I want to talk about. And
man, we're not done. Yeah, we got to keep going.
Well, I'm thinking about your wife, and I'm like, I know she's trying to see that house. You know, obviously, I want her to still love us. And come to LA to chill. I want her to be like, yep, we going. So,
as soon as Roma get out of here, we are on the first flight. Do you hear me?
I want to talk about that. I just lost my train of thought with that. What was I going to say?
One last thing.
Yeah, we were talking about rejection. We're talking about criticism.
Criticism.
Oh gosh,
I'm sorry. I'll take.
No, stop. I was going to talk about something along the lines of, so you face criticism, which is a sign of effectiveness, and as you face criticism in your field, in your area, this is what I was going to say. This quote really, it's from John Maxwell the other day when we met him. This was the number one thing that stood out to me. He said, success separates you. Don't let it.
Mm.
And when he said that, I thought, wow, success, not even in our heart always. It's usually, I find, in other people's hearts that they've separated. It's almost like I got to fight to keep old friends, family, people. It changed. It separates you. And he's like, don't let it. How have you had to fight against that? Because you went boom, and your whole world reacts to that.
Yeah.
Look about Tulsa, the family barbecue.
Oh yeah.
Cousins, like when you become the patriarch of your family.
Yeah.
How are you fighting that?
So I think the one thing is, I love that quote, and I think for me, I had to reevaluate all my relationships. So I think when things started separating, I had to be very intentional of who I was going to go after, and what I was going to come close to. Because honestly, in this season, my biggest commodity got taken up, which is time. Like, and so when time is very valuable now, you have to make wise decisions. I tell people now, you have to budget your time. Just like you would budget your money, you have to budget your time. And that made me reevaluate who I'm going to draw close to. And there are a few people that I had to separate from just because the value of what I would get out when I was putting in was not worth what this season had called me to.
Right.
But for those relationships that I felt like, yo, I have to have those people in my life, they make me better. That's iron sharpening iron. Those are people I need to pour into. Those are people I need to pour into me. What I did was I made intentional effort to get in people's world, honestly, this very practically, face to face as much as possible. Awesome. So let me give you an example. One of my mentors is Tim Ross. He's been with me and been around me since I was in youth ministry. Nobody knew who I was. I'll literally drive. He lives in Dallas, Texas, or Irving. I'll literally drive to Dallas on a random Tuesday, 4 hours, to just have breakfast with him and turn around and come back. Now, most people would not think that was a good use of time, but the level of impartation, connectivity, communication, wisdom that I get and an hour and 30 minute conversation with him is worth an 8 hour drive. And because I make the investment of that in this season, it makes it for him worth investing into me. And so there's this reciprocal thing that happens. Like, he's like, yo, nobody does that to talk to me. And I was like, but it's worth it to me. So let me give you everything I got. Well, let me bless you by listening to what you're saying. Like, and there's this. And so our relationship has gotten so much better in this season because I cut out a lot of the yo bro relationships and hey doc relationships and hey bro, we need to eat together for lunch. Like things that were more about an Instagram picture than actually impartation. Mm. Like I don't do those that much. Like, it just right now is not a value. And that's what doesn't separate me. I've gotten around people who remember what it was like when I was believing God for $10,000 to come in a week so that we didn't have to fire anybody. Like, I get around people who remember what it was that I was preaching on Sundays, playing the drums, and doing stage design. Like you know what I'm saying? Like, I have date night with my wife every week, no matter what. Like, every Tuesday, I'm with her. Like, those are the things that I believe you have to set up consistent guardrails, or a better word is accountability, so that you don't separate yourself. That there are people who can be anchors. I spend tons of time with my kid. My son, MJ, he has autism. He's 4 years old. And he doesn't speak yet. And you know what it is to have a child with special needs. Though everybody looks at that as something that's devastating and horrible, and I wish that things were different, I've changed even my perspective. Like, that has been an anchor for me. To get down on the floor, no matter what platform I've been on, I go into his playroom and get on the floor with him and try to teach him the ABCs at 4 years old. Like, those are the things that, like, make you, like, hey, I'm not going to separate. Like, I'm not going to let success take me away, and I'm out here performing for everybody else and not being able to really love those who are closest to me. And so, yeah, man, I think it's a matter of perspective, really. I'm sorry it's not wrapped in a neat little bow,
no,
but I'm
perfect.
In my heart. Like, those are things that I'm doing because it's happening so fast.
In real time. It happens in real time.
Yeah, man.
My it's really interesting because I feel like, you know, our kind of crew, our guys, we all kind of came up together years ago, right? Richie and Carl and Judah, we all kind of started going to the conferences and all that, and it was like Instagram was just coming out, and it was just such a different day. And when he said that, when John Maxwell said that, I thought of years ago, things that were changing in my life that I look back and go, man, I wish I would have handled that different. For you, it's real time.
Like, it's happening right now.
Real time.
Right
and,
now.
I get excited thinking about the future of your life and the longevity. I love the way that you love your family. I love the way that you love your wife. I just think who you are is a very pure, authentic, sincere person. And I love this about Rich, because Rich has an ability to, I think it's because it happened to him. He has an ability to go like, hey, go. We're with you. Go. And we need people in our lives
that
go like, hey, just go, man.
Yeah.
We'll be here, front row, rooting you on, whatever you need. Because a lot of people are going to be like, opinion. And you need some people in your world that are just like,
go. Yeah, bro.
Go.
I mean, Rich, honestly, shout out to DJ Richie Rich. He was the first one that really – reached out, and it was, I think, VU conference 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
That yeah, 2 years ago when you came.
Yeah, he was just like, bro, I want you to just come hang. Like, you don't have to speak. You don't have to do anything. I'd just love for you to come, and we're going to take care of everything. And nobody had ever invited me to a conference to just hang, like, to come. Was when he introduced me to you guys and everybody, we just clicked. Everybody was just like, oh yeah, like it was like everybody knew each other for a long time, and same spirit, same heart. And it was that open door, and not being intimidated, afraid, or even feeling any like, prove yourself, let us, like, it was just like, yeah, dog, come in. It was that, like, yeah, go, like,
go.
That thing, it really showed me how to treat other people. That really gave me a confidence in this new sphere that I didn't have to be a butthole. I did not have to be
no competition.
Territorial. I didn't have to be competition. And there's a lot of guys in every field, and it's sad to say in our field as well, that it's all about making sure I maintain and obtain like this ground and like let nobody in. And I'm like, bro, like what's for me is for me. What God has my name on can't nobody else take. And Rich walks in that level of confidence, and the whole squad walks in that level of confidence. And it's just so cool to see how that has translated into us being able to do ministry. I mean, there have been times I'll be like, yo, I'm preaching at this place. You're like, yeah, I was there yesterday. And this, that, the third, the fourth. And then you can call me, or I can call Robert, or yesterday Carl texted me like, how you doing in Tulsa? It's like being able to just celebrate, support, and lift up what each other is doing. It's been one of the greatest benefits that I've had just stepping into this new level of exposure in ministry, bro. So I love you guys. I love everybody, man. Thank y'all. Man,
well, I appreciate who you are. Go. Keep doing you. Keep loving your family. Keep smiling. You got a world-class smile. I mean, my God.
We're talking to Mr. Smile Club himself, Mr. Crest White Strips. Mr.
But I just said, like, man, keep going. Keep inspiring. Keep encouraging. The world needs more inspirational, Bible-believing, spirit-filled, family-loving men of integrity that are at the intersect of faith and culture.
Yes, sir.
Like yes, intersect. Sir.
That's where I live.
Not here, like bop-bop.
Yep,
bop-bop. Let's rock. So I love you, man.
Hey, bro, I love you too. If Rona's out of here when y'all do a conference this year, I might need work me into a morning session. I'll do a Wednesday afternoon. No, I'm
just kidding. How about that one morning when it was like me, you, and Craig, and all in one morning? It's like bop, 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 and then one other guy. Those are them old school conferences when it's like, yo, it's noon. We've had five sessions.
We've had five sessions, and it's 9 a.m. That is not okay. Man, I love you, bro.
I love you, man. Stay safe.
Hey, man, we got to do this when it's in person one time. I'm coming on another Leadership Lean In, and we're going to make it happen.
We're going to do it.
I love you, bro.
I love you, man.
My name's Preston Sprinkle, and I host the Theology in the Raw podcast. Theology in Raw aims to help believers to think Christianly about theological and cultural issues by engaging in curious conversations with a diverse range of thoughtful people. I have conversations with a wide range of different guests who come from different perspectives, and no topic is off limits. Sexuality, abortion, politics, LGBTQ, warfare, violence, marijuana, immigration, you name it. If you have a theological or cultural issue that you have been wrestling with over 1,100 episodes, we've probably talked about it on Theology in the Raw. Along with conversations with various people, I also address questions sent in from my audience every month. And occasionally, I will talk about some of my latest research projects that I'm currently working on. Theology in the Raw is not for everyone. It is uncut, uncensored, and I don't give trigger warnings. So check out Theology in the Raw through your favorite podcast app.
Do you ever feel like you want to know more about the Bible, but that it's kind of hard to understand? Do you want to share your faith with your friends, but have a hard time figuring out how to do that? Do you want to learn how to connect the Bible to your real life? Well, then this is the show for you. My name is Rachel, and I'm your host. I've been a children's pastor for a long time, and one of my favorite things is helping kids learn how to understand the Bible. I think that sometimes people think that the Bible is just for adults, but God actually really wants kids to know about Him. So on this podcast, we're going to learn all about God's big story and how He shows Himself to us through the Bible. As we learn together what the stories in the Bible mean, we can learn how to live out our faith in our everyday life. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode.